You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
In 2009, Irk went to the dark side and became a music podcaster. He discovered a wide, wide selection of music. Apart from Dozy Do by Julie the Band, it's now 2010 and Irk comes down the pipe and into your ears. Bigger, stronger and faster. Every Friday, it's Irk FM time. Now here's your host of Irk FM from Channel Irk, here's Irk.
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 91 of Irk FM. Wow, we're getting very, very close to 100, aren't we? And that's probably helped by doing two episodes a week. The regular music show that comes down the pipe and into your ears at the end of each week, and the interview episodes that come on Tuesdays. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking with various artists across genres that I have played before on Irk FM. And then I thought, and I've tried to get this happening for a while, is to get some of my fellow members from the Association of Music Podcasting on Irk FM so you can hear a little bit about them, go and listen to their shows, because they present a wide range of music in a wide range of varieties and a wide range of styles. And the man I'm about to talk to has two separate music podcasts and another podcast that we've just recorded. From the United States, we have George, who's the host of the Sounds of Ambience and the Eclectic Mix podcast. G'day, George.
How's it going there, Irk?
I'm doing good, mate. It's late your time in the US. Whereabouts in the US are you from?
I'm in Columbia, Maryland. It's about halfway between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore.
Oh, wow. Roughly this time last year, I was in your neck of the woods and I didn't even know it. Well, there you go.
There you have it.
I was down in the Balticon, down in the Baltimore area for Balticon last year. And there's another couple of podcasters based in your general area. Jamie the Pod Medic with the Medic Cast and the Nursing Show. And also Some Guys in a Car, which do a sort of a talk show-based podcast, but I haven't heard from those guys for a while, but they're based in your general area as well, so who
knows? Jamie did a one-minute how-to for me years ago. I'll have to see if I can get him back on the show.
Well, there you go. It's a small world, isn't it?
Indeed.
I was going to ask you to tell us a little bit about Maryland, but everyone seems to know basically what that area is like. What's the weather like at the moment? You're just sort of coming into spring and into summer. Gorgeous time
yes,
of the year
indeed.
Over there.
Yeah, it was pretty much a perfect day today. I guess probably in the low 70s. I don't know if you all do Celsius or not, but I guess that's what around, I don't know, a little less than 20 Celsius or something like that. Not quite sure. But it's perfect weather. We had a horrid winter. our winters here in Columbia, Maryland, are usually pretty wimpy, and I like that because I'm not much one to enjoy the cold. But this past winter, at one point, we got 30 inches of snow, pretty much overnight, which just overwhelmed everything. And once we got dug out of that several days later, then we got, I think, another 16 inches. So we had the largest recorded snowfall ever here in Columbia. So hopefully that'll do us for the next 20 years or so.
So let's get on to podcasting, because that's what we're here to talk about, and music podcasting in particular. Have you had any radio experience? Your voice sounds like it's got the typical radio-type voice. Have you had any training?
No, not at all. When I was in college, Well, actually, that was quite some time back. About 1970, there was a college radio station, and I listened to it my freshman year, and I had the brilliant idea of having a show where instead of playing the popular tunes, one would play tunes from the albums that the artists were putting out. So, in other words, you'd take a Doors album, and instead of playing the popular songs, you'd play the other songs. And I spoke with them at the end of the year about that, and the station manager thought it was an excellent idea and told me to come back at the beginning of the next school year and they'd get me started. And when I did that at the beginning of the next school year, the radio station had closed. So that's as close as I ever got.
Until podcasting. How did you hear about podcasting in the first place?
Podcasting, that was through Leo Laporte. I had followed Leo Laporte, his television show, for years, and then it went away. And then I heard that he was going to be doing something called podcasting. I had no idea what it was, but his show came out a little over 5 years ago. And when I heard it, I thought, you know what? I'll bet you I could do something like that myself. So I took a couple of months and prepared everything, got everything together, and then put together my Eclectic Mix show.
So the Eclectic Mix was first. And mm-hmm. So how long have you been doing that? Let's give some sort of time frame.
Yeah, it's been just about 5 years. I started it in, it was either June or July of 2005. So it's been just about 5 years.
And so what are the big differences between the podcast now and 5 years ago? You would have changed the format maybe, or changed the way you present the show?
Well, I guess you could probably say that if you listened to maybe the first half dozen shows or so, because at that point, even though I thought that I was prepared and I had everything pretty much together, looking back on it, I didn't. But actually, after maybe about my dozenth episode or so, I pretty much have kept the same format. First off, the show is called Eclectic Mix because I select from any genre that I enjoy, which literally spans from 17th century lute music to punk. I mean, I've played it all. And I decided early on that what I wanted to do was I wanted the listener to get a chance to know the artist. Instead of playing one song from a bunch of different artists, I decided to just focus in on one artist at a time. And that's what I've done for the last almost 300 shows. I've selected an artist and I've played just their music throughout the show.
So how long would a normal episode be? What's the duration of a normal episode?
I guess if you were to put them all together and average them out, probably 25 to 30 minutes. I think that's a good period of time to get a chance to listen to maybe about five songs from an artist and give me an opportunity to say a thing or two about them and make sure that people get a chance to hear where their website is and that sort of thing.
Is there any sort of music where you'll just draw the line and say, no, I'm not playing it?
Yeah, if I don't love it. And there's a lot that I don't love, but there's a lot that I do love. There are very few genres that I just don't have any use for. But it's really just the sort of deal where there is so much wonderful music out there. It's just incredible that the internet has just made things so much easier as far as going out and finding some great music to listen to.
So when it comes to picking your music, do you go out and find most of the music, or does most of the music come to you?
It works both ways. I would say probably two-thirds of my shows come through submissions, And it actually is probably more like 75% come through submissions. And I think that is because there are so many artists who end up contacting me, and I'd love to play. And right now I've got well over 100 artists that I would like to have time to play, but I just haven't gotten to their music yet, and that just may not happen, unfortunately. If I had a daily show, then I guess it would probably end up working out just fine.
But then again, you've got all the added production and everything like that. So for an average show, how long would it take you to produce it and tie the ribbons on it?
Oh, probably about 2 hours. Yeah, I just generally speaking, it would probably be about 2 hours to gather the music, to put everything together, to sequence it, to figure out what I'm going to say, and then record the show, and then go back and edit it and the whole deal. I guess 2 hours would probably be a pretty good average.
I dare say that that's pretty much ballpark for a show that size. An hour to 2 hours seems to be average for people that I've spoken to in general. So, yeah. Hard question for you. What's your favorite genre of music?
Classical. Yeah, I mean, that's easy. When I was trying to decide what I wanted to have my podcast be about, and I had decided that it was going to be a music podcast, I would have just kept it in the classical genre, but unfortunately there just aren't enough classical independent artists out there. It's just not as viable for them as it is maybe to an indie artist, like indie rock or that sort of thing. So I decided I couldn't do that. So I couldn't do it on classical. I mean, for a couple of years in my college life, I was a music theory and composition major, so I've studied it all and I've appreciated it all. So, yeah, classical would be the easy answer.
What about out of the genres that you regularly play? Any standouts?
Well, again, classical, because I have found independent artists, again, not many, and I've actually found some signed artists who have put some of their music out there, like Rachel Barton Pine, an incredible violinist. She put some of her music out for podcasters to be able to pick up and play. But I guess number two would probably end up being jazz. I've just listened to jazz pretty much all my life and appreciated it so much that I try to keep away from it because otherwise it might end up sort of taking over the show. And I really want mostly to provide a whole spectrum of genres, which is why oftentimes I'll go outside of the United States and find like a Danish folk singer or an indie group in Czechoslovakia or something of that sort. I had a guy from Hong Kong. I actually ended up interviewing him years ago. So I try to keep it as inclusive as possible.
Do you do many interviews?
I used to, but and I enjoyed doing the interviews. That was something that I was going to make as a regular part of the show early on. But unfortunately, people just really weren't listening to the interviews. When I would look at my stats, I would see that the shows, which were primarily interviews, pretty much nobody had an interest in those. So I thought, well, okay, alas, that's the way it is.
And that's the thing. You really have to try these sort of things. And I hope that there's about 20 people from the association at least listening to this one.
Yeah, it's you try different things, and some things work and other things don't. And that's the way things are put together. And the show that I have now is really pretty much a result of trying a few things here and there, but again, basically the format stayed the same because I think that that works well for me.
So if you had to list some of your favorite artists that you've played, who would they be?
Well, boy, you know, that's... okay, yeah, I can... I would say my favorite, and a lot, you know, it's difficult to come up with a favorite for a lot of people, but for me, there's one that just stands out, and it's the Primetime Sublime Community Orchestra. This person, and I can't remember his name. I did his music probably about 4.5 years ago, and it is some of the most highly skilled music you'll ever hear, but you wouldn't necessarily know what it actually took in order to put this stuff together. It's just incredible. I would say he was definitely my absolute favorite. But there have been numerous others ever since, and like All India Radio would be an example. I've played them also on my Sounds of Ambience podcast. Paul Adams would be another one. These are just some artists where whenever they come out with something, it just grabs my attention immediately.
So you've been doing this particular podcast for 5 years now. Are many podcasts that were on around about the same time as you, are they still around? Do you know of many?
There aren't too many. I mean, Dave's Lounge would be one of them. He's a member of the Association of Music Podcasting. I very briefly met him back at PodcasterCon in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I doubt he remembers that, but that's one of the few. I would say... a lot of them have gone away. Insomnia Radio, you're a part of that now, and actually Jason was very influential in getting me into the whole podcasting realm, because when I first started listening to podcasts, I was trying to find something that I liked, and I just wasn't finding anything. And then I came across, I think it was called Hardcore Insomnia Radio at the time. And, you know, when I heard the show, it was like, oh, okay, there we go. That's exactly what I was looking for. I think I was probably like show 5 or 6 or something like that. That was quite some time back. But I would say the vast majority of them have faded away.
And, of course, you produce podcasts. Do you listen to many as well?
I do. I don't listen to as many as I used to. Mainly, it's just one of those time things. I do listen to a number of them. I listen to some music podcasts, but there are a lot of others that I end up listening to. Like non-music would be, for instance, Jeff Curtos's Camera Position, because photography is a passion for me. Are We Alone is SETI's podcast, which is always incredibly interesting. And occasionally I'll listen to Dave Jackson's School of Podcasting. So those are just some of the non-music podcasts I listen to.
Do you also listen to the This Week in Tech Network, the Twit Network as well?
Well, you know, I used to. And I don't anymore, because that is what Leo Laporte's podcast became. What I used to do was, when his show would come out, I would go ahead and burn it to CD, and then I would listen to it on my way to work. But unfortunately, what happened was they started having shows that were longer than 80 minutes, which, of course, then no longer fits on a CD. So that would mean that first thing in the morning, what I would need to do would be to take the show and throw it into Audacity and chop it up into parts that would end up fitting on a CD and all this and that. And that's really not what I wanted to do first thing in the morning. So I just ended up replacing that with another one.
That certainly makes it difficult, but I'm trusting you're not doing that now. I trust you've got an MP3 player in the car now.
Actually, no.
Really?
No. I still just, you know, I've got a 2004 Toyota Corolla, and it's just got the CD player that came with it, and that's basically what I use.
So it hasn't even got, like, an FM radio, so you can do an FM radio transmitter or anything like that?
Well, it does, but I've tried those. But they end up being such poor quality. I mean, maybe it's the sort of thing where one really needs to spend a good bit of money to get a good quality transmitter. But the one I tried two of them, and both of them were just such terrible quality that I said, well, okay, this just isn't going to work for me.
No, it's very interesting because a lot of people now obviously have MP3 players. So it's interesting mm-hmm. to hear that there's still someone out there who will download the podcast and then put it onto a CD so they can listen to it. So maybe that's a tip for people to keep their show under 80 minutes.
there aren't too many that are over 80 minutes. That is actually a minority of shows. But also I'll end up listening to submissions in the car, so you know, it's not a hassle, and I use rewritable CDs, so that's not a problem.
Actually, I hadn't really thought of that because I spend a lot of my commute time and a lot of my train driving time listening to various podcasts, and so I usually don't listen to the submissions in the car or at work because I'm listening to other music podcasts, and that's how I find a lot of my music. By listening mm-hmm. to other shows. So, you know, what works for you? I really hadn't thought of taking the time to listen to the submissions actually in the car. It's an interesting thought.
Mm.
How did you get involved with the Association of Music Podcasting?
Well, that was something that happened back in 2005. Actually, I heard about them quite early. It was probably through Hardcore Insomnia Radio. Jason probably mentioned them, and when I saw what they were doing, I realized this is something that I want to be a part of. And so I ended up speaking with Derek Oyn, who was the one who was basically in charge at the time back then. He and Chris McDonald, they were both in Chapel Hill at PodcasterCon, and I ended up working with them to make sure that the association was able to get a weekly podcast up and going and start building a little bit of a membership, a little bit of a following there.
And so how do you enjoy putting together, when it's your turn to put together things like Amp New Music Weekly?
Mm. Well, I mean, it's always fun and a challenge to try to put different genres together in one show and try to make it a cohesive single element. And sometimes it doesn't work. And actually that's kind of okay, because sometimes instead of trying to get genres to complement one another, it's okay to get them to clash against one another. So it's a fun thing to work on.
And I take it that you've met some interesting people through the association and podcasting in general?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, where else could you go to meet a half-naked Azorian?
Well, he's going to regret saying that. I did mention that during his interview as well when I interviewed Rodriguez. So, yeah, that's a pretty standard in-joke these days that's sort of spreading a bit wider. Do you still take part, or do you still have in your area, like podcaster meetups or tweet ups or anything like that to get together with people?
Yeah, actually in Pittsburgh, which is several hours west of me, every year there's a pod camp, and I went to the first three. I had to miss out last year, but it was because I got to go to New Orleans, which was very cool. But the pod camps are a lot of fun because it's the sort of thing where people aren't really trying to push or sell anything. They're really just there to meet one another and exchange ideas and share their experiences and help one another any way they can.
So, George, the Eclectic Mix, that's been continuous for the whole 5 years, is that right?
Yeah, it's been every week for the last 5 years, and occasionally an artist will contact me and let me know that they've got a new album out, and when that happens, if I featured them in the past, then I'll go ahead and pull a song from that album and just go ahead and do an update show, which is just one song, and I put it out in the middle of the week or so. I've actually got a whole bunch of update shows that I'm getting ready to put into the feed, so anyone listening from here on out in a couple of weeks are going to start getting two shows instead of one each week.
So you haven't missed a week in 5 years, is that right?
That's correct, right.
Wow, that is some achievement. How have you managed that? I'm presuming, you know, there's been times where it's come close to you not being able to get a show out.
Actually, no, because I'm just one of the sorts of people who ends up just getting jazzed on something, and I'll end up putting together numerous shows over the course of several days, and just get them ready. I mean, right now I'm done through show 300. So that's probably about half a dozen or so into the future.
So that's pretty cool. So it's not necessarily timely. You don't. I know some people get on their shows and say, you know, this is the episode for the week starting whatever. But you know, I necessarily don't see any point in that. And you have just said that you record, you know, several shows in advance. So that's an interesting tip for some people as well.
Well, yeah, and actually I think that my early shows, I did include the date, and then when I thought about it, I realized, you know, the music I'm playing right now is going to be just as listenable 5 years from now as it is right now. You know, who knows, maybe the artist is no longer around, maybe the group disbanded, whatever, but the music, which is the important thing, is still going to be just as valid. So I stopped bothering with announcing any kind of a date.
So do you find people go back and listen to your old shows as well?
Yes, which is one of the things that just absolutely floored me. I can go back and look at my stats for 4.5 years back, and I can see, I mean, not in droves, but certainly people are still downloading those shows, and that it just kind of boggles my mind that's really the case with all of my shows.
So you've been going continuous for 5 years with this podcast. What made you go across and do the Sounds of Ambience podcast at the same time?
Well, I started that a little over a year ago, and I think the reason was because it was a genre that I was starting to get interested in, and I realized that not everybody wanted to listen to an hour of drone. You know, I might be able to get away with it one time on Eclectic Mix, but more than once really wasn't going to cut it. And there was some really interesting stuff out there that I wanted to try to get a little more listenership for. So I went ahead and started that podcast to focus more in on the ambient music. I've strayed from that just a little bit on occasion, but generally speaking, that's going to be about an hour.
So for any of my listeners who aren't necessarily aware of what ambient sort of music is, can you explain briefly what they can expect?
Well, that's going to be rather difficult because even if I could verbalize it, there are so many definitions of ambient music. I guess if someone wants to just sort of look at the swath of the subgenres, then they can go to stillstream.com, where they list out a number of those subgenres, and it just kind of goes on and on. But basically, it's music that is really meant perhaps more for meditation, possibly background music. It's music that works with your mind. I guess that's the best way I can put it. Not that other music doesn't, but it does in a complementary way, a way that allows you to do a little more thinking as opposed to concentrating on the music. I think in many cases, people wouldn't consider it music, but actually, if anyone has an interest, they can go to Eclectic Mix and look at the show I did with the artist Guy David, and what he did was pretty far out there, and I actually went through a pretty lengthy explanation explaining why I really don't know what music is.
So is it harder to find this particular style of music?
No, it isn't. It's really all over the place. It's available many places, but my favorite place is certainly archive.org. That is just a place where, for one thing, it's a monster website. I first came across it when I was looking for music for Eclectic Mix, and they've got an incredible repository of live music, and that's where I came across many artists I've featured on my show. But they have a live music archive, but then they also have other sections too, and those other sections are basically where the ambient people hang out.
So if you had to give anyone who's just starting into podcasting, or more specifically music podcasting, some tips, what would you tell them as someone who's experienced the format?
Well, I'd probably tell them to start making shows without releasing them. And the reason I say that is because it's the sort of thing that's so easy to get started with and to get into. But if you're going to do, let's say, a weekly show, then it's amazing how fast those 7 days go before it's really expected for you to come up with another show. And there are a lot of shows that don't make it past their fifth episode. I think when Podcast 411 was out there, I think that's pretty much what they found, that if you can make it past five shows, then you're going to be able to do it on a regular basis. So try doing a show a week for 5 weeks, and if you're ready to do one on the sixth week, then it's time to go ahead and start sharing what you've done with everyone else. And the other thing that you'll find is you'll possibly find that those first few shows that you did may not be the quality that you really hoped that they would be. So you may not want to release them, or you may want to go ahead and re-record them. So I guess, and make sure that you absolutely love what you do, because If you love what you're doing, then you never have to do any work.
So have you found that the techniques that you used 5 years ago, have they changed much? Has the tech changed much for you?
Not a whole lot. It's pretty much the same. I guess the only real difference is that I have a lot more people, a lot more artists contacting me. Maybe for the first 100 shows or so, I really had to work to contact artists and to find Creative Commons music. And now it's really a matter of them coming to me. So that end of things has changed. It hasn't made it easier, really, because when you're going out there and looking and choosing, then you can pretty much do what you want, but when you have a lot of people contacting you, then you know that you're just never going to be able to have an opportunity to play their music. So that's a little difficult at times.
Especially when someone emails you and says, "I've got a new album coming out this week. You know, can you play it? You know, I want to play it this week. Is that possible?"
Yeah, and the answer is no.
Yes.
That's one advantage of being 5 or 6 weeks ahead.
I know I'm programmed 5 or 6 weeks ahead, not necessarily recorded, but in most instances programmed for that. So, yeah, I understand totally where you're coming from. How do you use things such as social networking to get the word out there about your shows and to interact with the fans and the artists?
Well, I've got a Facebook page, and I'm on LinkedIn, and of course I'm using Buzz through Gmail. That's pretty much it, though. When the social networks started out, I started joining all of them, and the next thing I knew, I was a member of pretty much everything, and I had no time to keep up with it all. And so I've tried to narrow things down just a bit. And so, again, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Buzz are pretty much where I spend my time as far as trying to get the word out is concerned. And I feel that I can, to some small degree, keep up with those.
What's the buzz on Google Buzz for those of us who haven't necessarily heard of what that is?
Well, if you've got a Gmail account, then they have added, like it or not, they have added something called Buzz, which is pretty much the same thing as any social network. It's really just, it's the same thing that's just all done through your Gmail email. So that's basically it. You follow people follow you, that sort of thing. You get a chance to announce what you're doing, etc.
I hate when Google bring out something new like they did with Google Wave and now Google Buzz. And you ask people on Twitter, you know, what's Google Buzz? What's Google Wave? And their first response is, watch the video. especially with Wave, the video was about an hour long, and people are like, watch the video if you want to know what it's about. Well, I don't want to watch a video for an hour and then decide, no, that's not for me.
Right, and I was involved in a Google Wave at one point, and it was fine to start off with, but once there were probably 50 or 60 entries into the conversation, it got very difficult to follow because there were people who were inserting comments not at the bottom but halfway in, and there really wasn't any way, maybe there is now, but there wasn't any way of knowing where that was. You'd see that there were two new messages, but you had no idea where in this array of messages those two new ones might happen to be. So that was a little annoying. I guess I should also mention that I'm on Twitter too. That's one of the other things. OMHT at Twitter.
I'll put a link in the show notes to all the places that we can find you. Tell us about the 1 Minute How To podcast. I know we recorded an episode before we recorded this interview. Tell us a bit about that and how that started.
Well, 1 Minute How To started. Here, let me just do something here. Yeah. I was just helping my girlfriend with a computer. And she's actually part of the reason why I created 1 Minute How To. And it's because she would ask me a question, and I would start in with the explanation. And at some point in time, I would see that her eyes would kind of glaze over, and I knew that she was kind of wishing that she had never asked the question in the first place. So
was that after the 1 minute mark?
I think so. I think that was at about the 1 minute mark. So I decided, and actually, when I first started listening to podcasts, before I even started Eclectic Mix, there was a podcast called, I think it might have been How to Do Stuff. And it was just a how-to podcast, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was just really well done and a lot of fun to listen to, and it faded away. And so after Eclectic Mix was pretty well underway and I decided I wanted to start another one, then the how-to idea and the 60-second idea just pretty much came together. And I was thinking, you know, I can try to come up with a different how-to each time, but I'm just not nearly that inventive. Now, I do every 10 how-tos, so I did the first one, and every 10th one is me, but I just decided that it would be a lot more interesting to have a guest come on and give them 60 seconds to explain how to do something.
And my 60 seconds was...
How to start an ambient noise podcast.
And we'll be hearing that at the end of the episode. But you've had some interesting guests, I presume. You've got, 400? I was episode 469, so you've had 468 other people who have been interesting.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of musicians have come on and not necessarily talked about music, but talked about other things. And that's because they realize that this show is a good vehicle for them to get noticed. And even though they may be talking about something like the last Aussie that I spoke with, he did one on how to pick bananas, but he was a musician, so his name is 8-Ball Aiken, and so, of course, his idea was to come up with something interesting, and then, oh, by the way, I'm a musician, and here's where you can hear my music. But I've also had a lot of authors, J.C. Hutchins, Scott Sigler, people like that who have podcast novels available. So I've had an array of people on the show.
So it sounds very interesting, and they're only very short, even though the title is 1 Minute How To. An average episode's, 5 minutes maybe?
Yeah, it's a self-imposed limit. No show is going to go longer than 5 minutes because I want to make sure that outside of the how-to that the guest gets an opportunity to let people know who they are and also to let them know if they've got a website or a book or an album or, you know, whatever the case may happen to be, make sure that is available. And sometimes I'll have a question after they finish their how to. Maybe I'll want them to expand on something just a little bit. So, but I always keep it within five minutes.
So there we go, folks. If you're looking for a podcast about how to do various things, I was looking at the list a bit earlier in iTunes. There's a massive list of things that you can find out how to do. I'll put a link in the show notes. So what's the easiest way for us to get in contact with you and to find out about everything that you're doing?
Well, each show has its own Gmail account. I've got numerous Gmail accounts. So for Eclectic Mix, it would be eclecticmix@gmail.com. And for 1 Minute How To, it would be 1MinuteHowTo@gmail.com. And for Sounds of Ambience, guess what? soundsofambience@gmail.com.
Oh, you would have been rather annoyed if you couldn't get that particular account, wouldn't you?
Well, I made sure that I had that before I started the show. It was interesting when I started with Eclectic Mix. I wanted to make sure that I had that domain, and I was trying to think of other possibilities in case I couldn't get Eclectic Mix, and I had come up with Eclectic Blend, which I didn't really like, but I thought, well, you know, that might be something I would go towards if I can't get Eclectic Mix. Well, as it turned out, eclecticblend.com, at least at the time, wasn't available, but Eclectic Mix was, so it worked out.
So it worked out rather well. So we're going to conclude with episode 469 of 1 Minute How To, and it's me talking about how to do an ambient noise podcast. George, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Irk, thanks a lot. I really enjoyed it.
No worries. So this has been Irk FM episode 91. Don't forget to tune in on Friday, where I'll try and keep the episode under 80 minutes so George can listen to it in his car on the CD.
Indeed.
Until next time, I'm Irk, and on behalf of George and his various podcasts, good night, Interweb.
This is the 1 Minute How To, item 469, how to do an ambient noise podcast. Hello, everyone. This is George, your host. On this show, we've got Irk, and he's going to explain to us how to do an ambient noise podcast. Irk, can you first tell us a little something about yourself?
G'day, George, from Sydney, Australia, down under. I am a podcaster. I do 5 podcasts a week on channelirk.com. I've just started Insomnia Radio Australia at australia.insomniaradio.net. And when I'm not doing that, I drive trains here in Sydney.
Okay, Irk, if you're ready, then you've got 60 seconds.
The easiest way to record an ambient noise podcast is to have some sort of recorder. Doesn't matter if it's an old digital-style recorder or if it's an application on an iPhone or an Android, just as long as you've got some sort of recorder. Turn the recorder on, place it in a shirt pocket I find is best because the material's thin, and just walk around. You can make noise if you want. You can take part in the activity if you want. Recently, I went go-kart racing with the recorder in my pocket, and the recorder just picks up any noise that you can hear. When you're not talking, you'll be surprised about how much noise you can actually hear. Record for as long as you want. Don't worry about people talking. That's the whole idea. Record, release it as a podcast, and you're done.
Irk, what kind of applications might be suitable for this sort of thing?
There's lots of different applications according to if you're using something like an iPhone or a Nokia or an Android, for instance. You might be able to get by with just the one that's already in the phone. I, on my iPhone, use one that's called iTalk Lite. It's free. There is a paid version as well. I like it because there's a big red button that when you press it, it says recording, and you can stop the recording at any time. You can pause it. You've got a variety of settings on it, and it just works a lot better than the standard iPhone recorder.
Irk, is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Actually, I thought I'd give your listeners a bit of a treat. Here's an example of what I recorded, because what you can also do, instead of being in one scene for maybe half an hour or more, you can record little scenes and then put them all together for a podcast as well. So here's one that I prepared earlier for you. And that, my friend, was a freight train passing me. I was at a station at work. I saw it approaching in the distance. I got my iPhone out, hit the record button, and just recorded that little bit, and I can put several of those together to make an episode.
That's pretty simple. Irk, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
No worries, George. Been a pleasure, mate.
You have been listening to a Channel Irk production. Channel Irk and all five podcasts are licensed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative, share-alike license registered in Australia. Music is used with direct permission or under agreements with various music providers. All rights to the music contained within remains with the original rights holder. Some sound effects are sourced from the Free Sound Project under Creative Commons. For more information about Channel Irk, go to www.channelirk.com.